You feel its edges in your mind before they even reach your fingers. There's a tremor inside it. Dare you open it? Too late. You already have. Welcome to Haunted MTL's Combo Box, with contributors John Combo and J.M. Brannick.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Combo Box, where we discuss things in the name of Haunted MTL. I am one of two hosts for this show, J.M. Brannick, a.k.a. Box Human, along with my second host, John Combo.
I am here.
He is here. He is in the aliveness. I guarantee it. You have my approval. And we are here to talk today first about a mishap that happened last week. Yeah. We were so excited to talk to you about our new art that we forgot to talk to you about the most important thing in our lives.
We did. And this is why I don't have the intro mic anymore. Well, yes. Today at least.
Exactly. Forever. Forever and ever.
Forever.
And I guarantee you, this is not his ghost. He's alive. I did not kill him. But so let us go back to the days of old where we talk about delicious combos. So how are your combos?
Last week I had the 7-layer dip combos.
And were they all types of what? Okay, how many? What were in the layers?
I don't know. I mean, it's a typical 7-layer dip, like picture on it. You know, like there's the refried beans, there's like the sour cream, the guacamole, you know, you get the cheese, all that in there. And you think that surely there is no way you're going to get all those flavors into it.
It doesn't.
I'm not saying it tasted 100% like scooping a tortilla chip into all 7 layers and getting a bite of that, but it was pretty amazingly close.
That's weird.
I got to tell you, they were delicious, and I'm sorry I don't have any with me right now.
Were they all out at the store?
They were all out. Actually, today is a Doritos day.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That okay, you're off the show.
The most unbox-shaped snack I could get.
Yes, and the most uncomboist.
Correct.
Truly, truly rude to all of our fans out there. So I had something that did come in a box today. It was a sandwich, some kind of amalgamation sandwich that came from Hungry Howie's, which is a northern food, you cannot get it in Missouri, at the very least. Since I am hailing from Michigan, Hungry Howie's is a delicious pizza chain with a very strange-looking young man on the cover with his mouth kind of hanging open. But it was pretty good, but it did come in a box, and it was delicious. But also on that note, we are talking about geographical places today. My geographical place is actually in Michigan, and yours is kind of up there too, isn't it?
It is, yep.
Ish.
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 Keep going left a little ways, but yeah.
But before we get to that, I do want to make just a general announcement. I would like to say a little hello and thank you to Watchful Eye Art, who is on Twitter. They did a very great icon piece for me and John.
Yes, they did.
And they're absolutely fun to work with. They're doing open commissions right now. Head over to Twitter. Take a look at their stuff. It is creepy. It's really fun. It's kind of in the vein of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark kind of a theme.
Yes, it is.
And just go to at Watchful Eye Art. So do you want to lead the charge today for what we're doing and why we're here, why we've all gathered here today?
Yeah, sure. Today we've decided we are going to discuss one state and the top 5 cryptids of that state.
Spooky.
Now, Box, you picked Michigan.
Michigan.
You picked Michigan because you live there, right?
Yes, mostly.
I, a very adamant East Coaster chose Oregon because I've spent 3 years in Oregon, and if I had to move back to the West Coast, it would be to Oregon. It was a beautiful place. Still so much wild country out there. It's surprising. And a lot of the legends over there are still fascinating to me. So I will start with my number.
I've never been to Oregon.
Never?
Nope. Is it spooky?
It has its places. It definitely does. It's what I love about Oregon is Oregon country is still so young as far as the history of our country. And it's very, very much wild. It's not like the East Coast at all. And you can definitely see yourself getting lost in the woods. The just utter creepiness of being out somewhere when the moon is out and there's no lights and that is your only guide. It's an incredible feeling out there.
Is it cold?
It's depending on where you are. In relation to the mountains, if you're on the coast side of the mountains, it's pretty rainy, maintains about 60 to 70 degrees. If you're on the inland side of the mountains, it can easily drop to 30 degrees and snow like instantly.
Like always?
Not always, but no. I mean, I had some trips where it was like pretty hairy because I cut into the mountains and it started snowing and I had to find a way back out of the mountains real quick.
Did you find the trail?
I did find a trail.
The Oregon Trail?
I took the Oregon Trail out there.
Did you take it back? Did you get dysentery?
I did not get dysentery. No, I did not dysentery.
Did you get a gravestone? And you're like, oh, here lies Doritos.
No, the whole combo family made it out to Oregon.
Oh, good.
But so my first one is the Devil's Lake Monster, which Devil's Lake is kind of in the upper middle section of the coast near a city called Lincoln, Lincoln City, Oregon. And the Devil's Lake Monster, or Mictid Wakan. Now I just murdered the Sioux language.
There's gonna be a lot. Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of us super murdering the beautiful languages of the Native Americans.
Yes.
In this podcast, we apologize tremendously. I'm also going to be murdering French horrendously. So. Just do your best, John. Just do your best.
And if anyone from the Sioux tribe wants to send me a video pronouncing it, I would greatly appreciate it. But that word in Sioux means either mystery or bad spirit, and is an unknown aquatic creature that is said to reside in the depths of the Devil's Lake, located north of Lincoln City, Nebraska. Some describe it as having been octopus-like, and is associated with... Now, most of these spaces along the Oregon coast are associated with the fishing industry, the crabbers, the salmon runs, all that kind of. So what's that?
Crabbers. Is that the real term?
The crabbers. If you're a professional, if you professionally catch crab, you're a crabber.
That's amazing. I want to be a crabber. I do. That's okay. I've changed my life goals. I'm a crabber now.
And this creature, the Devil's Lake Monster, is associated with a lot of deaths in the region. And I think that's got a lot to do with how dangerous that industry is. If you look at Devil's Lake, it's actually connected to the ocean. It's not a true lake. So again, you go way back and you think of all the excuses or all of the things that we associated or made up to justify the deaths of family members and individuals. We make up monsters. And I think that this was one of those that was kind of chalked up to when a family member didn't come home after trying to go fishing. The Devil's Lake Monster got them.
And it was like octopus-like?
It says it's octopus-like. The Indians actually described it looking like an octopus. And actually, have said that they have seen it fight other monsters similar to like the Loch Ness monster.
Whoa.
But yes.
And when?
And when? And when?
Okay. Okay. Because that wouldn't have been as impressive if it's like, and he really lost.
Right. Hey, he's not actually there anymore.
Yeah. He got his ass handed to him, but he's still there. So what do you think on the scale of like believable and like not believable? And I don't want to say not believable, but like, but I said it.
I'm going to drop this way down this one, because again, I believe it was one of those stories that was told to justify people who didn't come back on boats.
Gotcha.
So
when was the last sighting, do you know?
I don't, there's no report of the last like real sighting of it. This is one of the monsters, and audience, my list is going from the oldest legend to the most recent created legend or witnessed cryptids.
Mine too.
So I feel like this is just one that has made it through the lore of the region for so long. It's just an accepted cryptid, an accepted legend.
Gotcha. I am doing Michigan, obviously. Michigan was formed when Paul Bunyan was knocked down after I knocked him over with a bully push with Hollywood Hulk Hogan. Like back in the days of yore, in the 17-somethings when the French were around, and then eventually it became a state. So my first cryptid legend is going to be the Nan Rouge, which I think a lot of people kind of know about, especially given that it's kind of getting more of a name now, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And anyway, it's basically called the Red Dwarf, or the Demon of the Strait, because for people who don't know, Detroit means the strait. It's not clever.
No.
It's a strait, and so they called it the strait.
The strait. So,
good job, France, for doing that. That's to the point, at least. But anyway, basically, it would appear only when there's trouble. There's this super cute little book that I found too that, let me get the name of it, it's the Project Gutenberg ebook of myths and legends of our own land.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, completed by Charles M. Skinner, and it was like from way back in the day. So it has this to say: the Nan Rouge, or Demon of the Strait, for it appeared only when there was to be trouble, in that it delighted. It was a shambling, red-faced creature with a cold, glittering eye and teeth protruding from a grinning mouth. So this is how it goes. In 1701, apparently there was a party that was held by the governor of New France in honor of Cadillac, who had just been given permission to build a fort. Woohoo! Suddenly, an old fortune teller appears at the door, like they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the fortune teller comes in and basically says, dude, a red imp is going to come and you got to be nice to it. And if you're nice to it, you're going to get like lots of cool stuff happening. But if you're like a dick to it, Cadillac was like, okay. And then so one day he was walking and he and his wife saw this little person who was acting like kind of a dick. And Cadillac got mad and smacked it with his cane. And it turned out to be dun-dun-dun Nan Rouge. Then basically it made his life shitty. And
real, oh.
It sticks around Detroit, and whenever something shitty happens, it's here. So like in 1763, it was seen before there was like this ambush at the Battle of the Bloody Run. In 1805, when there was a super big fire, in the War of 1812, when Detroit surrendered to the British, because they were dicks, the British, supposedly was doing backflips during the 1967 riots.
Okay.
Yeah. In 1976, supposedly two DTE workers, Detroit Edison electrical workers, saw it on a utility pole, and then came a huge ice storm.
Huh.
Yeah. However, there actually are no real records that go back that show the legend of the Nain Rouge going back to the time of Cadillac. The earliest version is in this story called The Legends of Les Detroit, or Les Detroit, by Marie Caroline Watson Hamlin. She has four freaking names. But anyway, in her book, she published it in 1883. So that was like 100 some years after Cadillac was supposed to even have had this occur. So rewriting history a lot. So, and there's some talk that she might have made up the story to kind of bring back some French pride and into Detroit and yada, yada, yada.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So fast forward to 2009. This is when the, and I forget, it's the March Day something, something, something. Basically, it's a Spring Street Festival slash March to drive the Nain Rouge away and liberate Detroit from him. And it happens like every spring. And like, there's like apparently like 5,000 people that like celebrate. And basically they started it because they were talking about how like New Orleans and Detroit have like a lot of similarities around French heritage and founding. But Detroit really didn't have anything like Mardi Gras. And so they were like, oh, we should probably like start protesting the Nain Rouge because he's a dick. And like, you know, he brings misfortune to the city. Well, there's like now pro Nain Rouge people too that are protesting the thing, and they're saying you have to appease him, like the legend says, or bad shit's gonna go down. Anyway, so apparently in this parade, the Nain Rouge comes riding on top of a mechanical cockroach.
Oh wow.
Yeah. I live here. I have never been here to this thing. Apparently, though, it was canceled this year.
Well.
So, no.
Reasonably.
Reasonably. Oh. However, maybe that's the Nain Rouge's work. To cancel this festival to chase him away so he can do bad things.
Anyway. That's awesome. That is an awesome tie-in right there.
But he has not technically been seen since 1976. There's actually a really, really good Metro Times piece on it. I suggest people go. It's like the legend of the legends of Detroit's Nain Rouge or something like that. But it's really interesting on a scale of what this is. I think it's a really interesting tale. Actually, I grew up kind of knowing about the Nain Rouge. And I was very, very, very into the paranormal and cryptids when I was younger. And I always really felt disappointed that that was what we got.
But I find it interesting, though. I mean, you know, we still have these festivals based around, and I understand, you know, the purpose of the festival is to keep them away.
Yeah. And actually, I kind of like it because, again, 2009 was kind of starting to be the resurgence Detroit pride.
Yes.
Detroit got real, real kicked in the balls for a real long time. And people outside of Detroit still feel like, ugh, Detroit, you know? And we have bounced back. And if you don't live here, you don't know that. But so that's kind of, in a way, cathartic, because it's like, it has something that it's like taking all that negativity and pushing it out and saying, this is our city. Get the fuck out.
Right.
We don't want your negativity. We don't want you to cause bad things to our city, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think from, if you believe in it standpoint, then I could see why you would be freaked out because it's a curse, you know. But as more of a folklore and tale, I think it's kind of, in a way, beautiful because it's like taking something old and revitalizing it to the what the city needs now.
Sure, yeah.
So, do I believe it? Not really, but I think it's kind of cool. So that's mine.
There you go.
What's yours?
Number four, working my way up, the Gumbaroo.
What is this? Is it Gumby, but also a kangaroo?
I'm not sure where the name came from. I'm not sure if it translates somehow.
Not disappoint me, John. Tell me yes.
It is not. In fact, it's almost like a hairless bear, like this big lumbering hairless bear.
That sounds horrid.
So this was another legend that started by the lumberjacks, or the beginnings of the foresting industry in Oregon way back in the 19th century. I'm not sure how this legend started, and I'm trying to like piece together what in fact they had seen that they thought this thing was, because it has all these interesting traits. It's not particularly fast. It is hairless. it's aggressive. It'll eat anything, and it is virtually impenetrable to weapons. It's said to have a tough leather skin that was unaffected by the Indians' arrows, and the only way the lumberjacks were able to defend themselves from this creature was with fire. And apparently when you lit it on fire, it blew up, leaving no evidence of its existence.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
And they said that the worst thing about it was that it was always eating, and that typically what happened is these lumberjacks would find their horses eaten. And to me, that's like some sort of justification for a bear attack. That being said,
like justification for a bear attack, like that's okay that a bear comes and eats them because there were horses.
I'm trying again, with these legends, you think about it, and there's reasons why these legends get created. A bear would have eaten these big West Coast grizzly bears at the time before we almost wiped out the population, would have been eating just about anything. And I could see this thing, a bear, being mistaken for this thing. Maybe it was a mangy bear. Maybe the thing was losing its hair. I don't know.
Oh, John.
Just a real ugly bear.
Wow. For all the bear listeners out there, I apologize. I do. I don't like bears.
One ugly bear. But that's the thing. And these things have been seen. There are actually reports that gumbaroos have been found in the wild. Yeah, I mean, even the name is hilarious. But that they've been found in the wild. The last reported, like, quote, capturing of one was the 1950s, I think, near Coos Bay.
What?
And you can see there's like a pretty decent looking mock-up. Go ahead, Google it. There's some decent mock-ups of what a real one would look like, but there's no like photographic evidence. There is reports that there have been at least 5 more encounters since then, but again, nothing to expand on that. Nothing, no reports, no eyewitness accounts, nothing. So,
wait, so in the 50s, they made a replica?
Well, this is the replica on Google is what they is a model of what was caught in the 50s.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. In the 50s, they had fucking cameras.
Right, exactly.
Why did they not camera it? Correct term, right?
Right, camera it. Yep.
Yeah. I write.
No, I don't know. This was just one of those legends that stuck around, and you know, it was a justification for something. I gotta say, it's probably bear attacks.
Yeah,
lot of things justify bear attacks.
Yeah, a lot of things do. I'm gonna try to look it up.
It's not a particularly pretty creature. It is.
So when. You said it was kind of seen after it. When was the last sighting?
The last official, like, dated sighting is that one in Coos Bay in 1957. After that, they say that there's been 5 more sightings, but there's no dates, there's no records as for where or when.
Yeah, it's probably just a hairless bear. Probably just somebody shaved a bear for fun.
I mean, lumberjacks had to entertain themselves too, I guess.
Right.
But on to your next.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm getting lost in all these gumbaroos. Yeah. So my number four, Bessie in our Erie, Lake Erie, to be exact. So yeah, Bessie. So it's kind of bordering a couple of other states, but that's okay. I'm going to take it anyway for Michigan. So there. All right. So it's a water aquatic monster, obviously, since it's in Lake Erie. Poor Bessie. I have to say, if it is indeed a living creature and is still alive, because Lake Erie is the most polluted Great Lake that we have. So
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It is not great. It's doing better now, but it's partly because it's the most shallow, and partly because of all the chemical runoff of like Detroit and things like that when people didn't give a shit. But then, you know, the 60s and 70s happened and suddenly people did give a shit. So I feel bad for poor old Bessie.
Absolutely.
But anyway, the first encounter that they had with Bessie was in 1793, when the captain of the Felicity, which I believe was a schooner, saw a 16-foot creature. That was it. He just saw it and was like, huh, that's weird.
Yeah, that's
By the way, it's snake-like. It's super, super long. Like, you'll see the sizes change dramatically, but it's usually between 30 to 40 feet. The colors change dramatically. It can be black, it can be copper, it can be gray. Some people said that it has a snake-like head. Some people say it has a dog-like head, which is super cute. I'm thinking like a seal, which again, aww, super cute. Somebody once said that it has the eyes the size of ostrich eggs. So,
okay. So big eyes?
Big eyes.
Big eyes. Okay.
Big doggy eyes. So, and you'll see that I kind of have a soft spot for Bessie. Anyway, so in 1817, there were actually three sightings. There was a schooner that basically just said that they saw a serpent in the water, like a big one, super big one. And then a whole entire boat crew saw like a 60-foot one. They shot at it, but it didn't do any good. But again, this is like when muskets were around. So they're like, we shot at it and it didn't do anything to the creature.
Right. Yeah.
Like, did you hit it? You probably didn't even hit it. So we don't even know. You're shooting at the water, you know?
Right.
I saw in Mythbusters that doesn't really work very well. Anyway. And then in Toledo, two French brothers saw what they said looked like a sturgeon with arms. And it was in its death throes. And it was like breached. And it was like wiggling around. They freak out. So they leave. And then they come back and it was gone. So that was those three sightings. Then in 1931, a fisherman claimed that they found it, like a couple fishermen did, and they managed to beat it up and capture it, but it turned out to be an Indian python. So that was
in Michigan?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it was a Native American python. It wasn't like a poor or Manon python.
Gotcha.
Shout out to my friends and also brother. Anyway, then in 1892, an entire crew saw the monster fighting something in the water. And they're like, whoa, that's crazy. And then it relaxed and it was like 50 feet. And then it just went away. They're like, huh. As you see, like, there's not really, it's not really like trying to eat anybody yet. Right now it's kind of chill. We continue. In 1985, a fisherman saw a serpent-like creature in the water with like five humps. And then after that were quite a few sightings in the 90s. Now, he said in no way was it a sturgeon. And that's important because in 2012, investigative journalist Steve Kovach thinks that he solved the case by thinking that it's just really big, super, super big sturgeons in the water.
Super big sturgeons?
Yeah, that's what he says.
Okay.
Like, because he said that the record was, like, some of the sturgeons are, like, 7 feet and weigh, like, 212 pounds. So they're like, oh, they're just probably seeing really big sturgeon. And they're like, oh, my God, it's 20 feet when it's really not. But this guy in 1985 was like, no way. I'm a fisherman. I know what sturgeon looked like. This wasn't a sturgeon. It had, like, it was serpent and it had humps. And also there were two accounts of it kind of like playing in the water, and that kind of freaked people out, but also that's kind of cute because it has a dog head and it was playing in the water. But anyway, then I got a taste for blood. Maybe. We don't know. So in 2001, within 24 hours, there were 3 attacks. There was basically a woman bathing, just enjoying a nice little swim, and she got bit. And she had like pretty big teeth marks in her side, and they were like circular, like a big jaw.
Oh.
Yeah. Like I said, within 24 hours, there was a son and a father that were swimming, and they got attacked, and the child had to be hospitalized because the bite mark was so, so bad. And so some people think that maybe it's a juvenile Bessie.
Okay.
That's like a chomp, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And some people think it's Cressy, which is another...
I'm sorry.
Cressy?
Cressy. Not
Cressy.
Not crusty. Cressy. No.
C-R-E-S-S-E-I-E.
I-E, okay.
Which is another sea monster from another lake, which is an eel.
Oh.
So they're like, well, maybe that swam over and bit them. And it's not Bessie, it's Cressy.
So these creatures are not interchangeable. They're just...
Maybe not.
Now they're stomping on each other's territory.
Maybe so. Maybe this is like a Real Housewives kind of situation.
Oh.
And
I would watch that. The real cryptids of the Great Lakes. Of Michigan. Sure, we'll do Michigan.
I would write that. And I would also watch that. But basically, that was kind of like the last that they've seen of her or him. We don't know. But it's kind of a beloved creature over here. On the scale of if it's true or if it's not, I am a skeptic now. I will put that out as my preface. However, I do have a really big soft spot for water cryptids because I feel like there is so much we do not understand within the waters.
Okay.
Erie is very shallow though, but still, I don't know. I kind of want to believe.
Hey, you know what?
You know.
Live and let live.
See, here's the thing too. With like land cryptids, you're like, where's the bones? There has to be like bones. There has to be some kind of like thing. With water cryptids, you would never know.
You wouldn't. You're right.
You would never know. There would be like in the bottom of the water. You would never know.
So, well, they'd be so dispersed.
Right.
Exactly. That you'd never, yeah.
Exactly. I'm a little bit more lenient when it comes to the water cryptids. So it's possible is what I will say with this. What is your number three?
Number three is, this is probably my favorite.
Ooh.
Actually, just because you take a
gumbo brew.
Well, imagine you are two love-struck teens somewhere in the state of Oregon.
Wait,
you're
two of them?
You and your other take a long drive out to a secluded spot where you hope to get lucky. Now, if this is happening in Oregon, do you get a crazed serial killer with a hook hand? Nope. You get the bandage man. What? So the bandage man, the bandage man is said.
Does he throw bandages on your window instead of his hooks?
It's just supposed, like, he's this creepy, described as covered in head to toe with oozing wounds that are only half covered by dirty cloth bandages. So the bandage man developed around the logging industry in Oregon.
There's a lot of logging industry.
There is. I mean, it's all associated with, you know,
those loggers had a lot of time on their hands.
Well, this was a guy who specifically worked in a sawmill who was subjected to a very horrible accident involving the saw and himself.
See, that's perfect for a hook hand. It's perfect for a hook hand.
So there are still reports all up and down Highway 101 of Oregon, which is the main coastal road of Oregon, of a man who will attack slow-moving or parked cars in his bandages. I know.
Watch out, grandmas.
I'm like,
he's coming.
It's like, oh boy, here he comes. It's like the hook hand is at least intimidating, but this guy is just like a horribly wounded individual. It's like,
oh God.
You almost want to stop, be like, sir, do you need to go to the hospital?
Do you need, here's $5, hon. Do you need a cab?
So this is one of those legends that just keeps kind of coming up. I mean, you think that this is an easy one. If somebody really wants to goof, like.
Oh, that's perfect.
You really want to be that guy who jumps out in front of a moving car on 101, which I don't suggest.
No, slow moving. Slow moving.
But I mean, this is
stopped.
This is easy. And I can kind of see where this came from, especially because a lot of that industry started shutting down in the smaller towns. So you get those legends that still kind of creep around about, oh, the old log mill, the old sawmill where the old bandage man still hangs out. Like, that just sounds so cool to me.
That sounds cool to you.
Sounds like it's, and I mean, like, apparently he is associated with the disappearance of pets, dogs, you know, all sorts of things.
Bandages.
He needs to keep them, get some clean bandages every once in a while.
You're like, honey, what happened to all my Polly Pocket bandages? They're like, oh no, he struck again. That son of a bitch.
So, and again, this falls in my list right around the time of, you know, that late 19th, early 20th century getting associated with the lumberjacks and everything.
Okay, but again, I get it. I do. And trust me, I had an uncle who worked in, I think it was either dairy or I don't know, some kind of farming something.
Okay.
And he got his hand mangled and had a hook hand, you know.
Okay. Yep.
So I grew up with somebody with hook hand and I loved him, but it was always also like, oh, hook hand, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And that he had different hooks that he could put on his hand. It wasn't like today, kids, where people had cool prosthetics and back in the day you had hooks and you
right.
had like a hook that you could use for a fork and then a hook. And, you know, and I loved him dearly, but even that, I'm like, bandage man?
Really? Look.
You could have so many things. You could have a saw hand, you know, or hands that, both hands with saws, just saws on them.
Nope, bandages.
I'm just spitballing here.
Bandages, you know? And oozy wounds.
Okay, you guys, okay, all right, okay. You struck one with the lumber Jew, lumber boo, boober goo,
kangaroo. The gumbaroo?
Gumbaroo. Okay, gumbaroo was one. This is number two. Lumberjacks can no longer come up with fables. Sorry.
I'm pretty much done with lumberjacks.
Okay.
That was the last lumberjack.
Good. Good. And on that note,
you're number three.
No.
No.
Our break, our sponsors.
Oh. The past. The almighty sponsors.
Yep. So take it away, sponsors of the past.
Patty Cake Baker, you're a famous man.
Well, all I do is bake them just as good as it can.
What did you seek for Mr. Patty Cake Man?
I sample them, ladies, one from each pan.
Children, stop shoving. There's more in the oven. Hey, Mom!
Put Patty Cake cookies on your shopping list.
Oatmeal, chocolate chip, and sugar mist. I'm seeing varieties on your market shelf.
Why, they're so good, you're lucky I don't eat them all myself.
Patty Cake cookies. Patty cake cookies.
Blue cellophane package, you can see what you buy.
What makes the taste a good patty cake man?
Well, to tell the truth, I sample them, two from each pan.
All right, thank you, sponsor of the past. That was riveting.
All hail the sponsor.
All right, so we have my number three, which is kind of like three little stories into okay. three. So this also comes from the Project Gutenberg ebook of myths and legends of our own land. And again, it's like written in old-timey language, which is really great. I've also kind of Googled a little bit more to get more information. So the first one is, I'm not going to really talk about it, but it is kind of interesting. There was a snake god / goddess of Belle Isle.
Okay.
And there's this whole mythology about it too. But anyway, his children became basically witches. And in the book it says, the snake god of Belle Isle and his children, the witches, for the latter sold enchantments and were the terror of good people. So that's how this starts. So basically, there are a couple of different players in the first one. And this is where I'm going to super, super kill it with my pronunciations. So there's Jacques Morand. He's our lead, not protagonist, our antagonist. There's Genevieve Parent, which is probably like Perron or something like that. Now she is the daughter of a courier de bois, which were basically fur traders, explorers, and like important citizens of New France. They were basically like Daniel Boone as an independent contractor for like
okay.
shipped, if shipped were for furs. So basically her father had a good amount of money, said, let's move to Detroit, that area. She's like, cool. She moves. This Jacques Morand came by with his friend Daniel something. And because they were explorers, and they were one of the 50 men who founded Fort St. Joseph near Port Huron. So these are all things that we know. But anyway, so Jacques got like super intense for Genevieve, and she was like, nah, I'm good. And she like really like turned him down. She was like, no, I'm gonna join a convent. He was not really happy about that. So he consulted with one of these children of the snake gods, a witch. So basically he could transform into a werewolf. Hmm. So he could nab her, Genevieve, which makes a lot of sense. So much sense, because you can't just do that as a human. So basically, she joins the convent. He goes to wolf nap her. She runs, throws herself on the statue of the Virgin Mary, pleads for help. And as he's about to pounce and grab her, he's petrified into stone.
Oh.
Yeah, because Virgin Mary is like, bitch, she said no. So basically, a stone from that perspective of legend fanciers resembles of a frozen face of a werewolf frozen in time. And it rests on the sandy Lake St. Clair beach and a summer retreat called Tonnecourt, which is located in Grosse Pointe Farms. So it's between Maras and Provincial Street. Yeah, I'm good at knowing this. But anyway, basically it's kind of like the remnants of the Bon Secours shrine that Genevieve built supposedly also are by that property. So it's very close to Detroit. That was one werewolf story. There was a lot of French werewolves. So the second French werewolf, there was a girl who was seized by a werewolf while she was dancing at her own wedding. And her husband devoted his life to trying to find her. Like, all his neighbors were, like, super cool and supportive. And one of the neighbors actually cut off the wolf's tail with a silver bullet.
Okay.
And the tail was preserved by the Native Americans for a while. I don't know for why, but for fun. So finally, the husband chased the werewolf to the shore where its footprints can still be seen in one of the boulders. But the wolf leapt into the water and disappeared. And this is the quote. In his crazy fancy, the leopard declared that it had jumped down the throat of a catfish. And that is why the French Canadians have a prejudice against catfish as an article of diet.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I gotta say that.
The French Canadians hate eating catfish because it swallowed a werewolf.
It swallowed a werewolf.
Super makes sense. Okay, last one. All right, last one. So this one's bad. Jean Chiquat?
Sure.
Yep. Got some Native Americans drunk and stole their shit. So the wood witches, known as the white women, fell upon him and took some of it back. And they called on, like, a werewolf, and he pounced on him so hard that he lost more of his shit. And he was able to get away, so he made it to a fort, and he told the officers at the fort what had happened. And the officers are all like, pussy. And so they went out to look what had happened, and they found, like, the grass was scorched where the women had fled, and there were little springs in the tuft that showed, like, where the wolf had, like, jumped at him, and, like, sulfur water was, like, bubbling up and stuff like that. And so it was called Bellefontaine, and for long afterwards. And I looked that up, and it was actually a township name. And Bellefontaine is now called Springwells, which is a part of Detroit that is by Zug Island and the River Rouge. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too. It was like, oh, it was over there that, you know, there was witches. And it was very cinematic.
So the last two stories, the werewolves are just werewolves. It's
yep,
these are characters that are already there, whereas in the first story a Frenchman becomes a werewolf.
Yeah, and we don't know if the other werewolves are Frenchmen or not. They're just around Frenchmen. I mean, there was a lot of French guys around that time. That time the French and the Native Americans were really chill with each other. It was the British that fucked it all up.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which is funny, because as Native American culture goes, like, usually werewolves are not necessarily people who turn into werewolves, but they're just another being. And it's interesting how it merged with French lore to create those three particular stories.
Right. Yeah. And it probably was, like, intermingling. Like, oh, well, back in French, we have something that's kind of like that.
Right.
You know? And yeah, because they're real tight back in the day. So I could definitely see, like, a lot of stories kind of get intermingled like that. But I thought that was kind of cool. And the idea of werewolves being in Detroit was kind of fun, too. Like old-timey Detroit.
Old-timey Detroit, yeah. that's it. And the fun fact about the catfish is that's...
So next time you see a French Canadian, which, again, haunted MTL, we can ask our boss. So do you like catfish? And if so, why? And he will be like, oh, well, there was this werewolf.
Yeah. That's what every parent has to tell their kid. It's like, no, we don't eat the catfish because the werewolf is in there. What?
And you see, like, one boy, like, gingerly put out his hand to try it, you know, to take a bite, and, like, getting slapped. No, we don't eat there.
Can't touch that.
Werewolf meat in there. Right? I think that's what French Canadians
I mean, We're going to have to ask. Now we have to ask.
All right, what's your number two?
My number two is Big Brown, the Willamette Beaver.
Oh, that's even worse. When you start off as Big Brown, I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah,
Beaver, and I'm like, what?
It doesn't get much better. But, so Big Brown.
Don't say it.
So, in the 1940s, Oregon was trying to deal with these incredible flood states of the Willamette River in the Willamette River Valley. It was destroying homes and farmland around the area. So they decided to begin a series of constructing dams to try and regulate that flooding. Well, as things started progressing, as the surveyors started going out and mapping where these dams would need to be placed, people were getting attacked. And reports were coming back that a giant beaver was attacking them. And this was the Army Corps of Engineers. So no slouches when it comes to, you know, roughing it.
Say that again, sir.
So
I saw a giant beaver out there. And it scared us.
Described as being a big brown beaver with red eyes, all wily and gnashing.
Yes.
So they begin construction and people start dying. After the third death, the team finally decided that they needed to do something about it. So 200 people are set on patrol of the Willamette River Valley, but nobody ever found Big Brown, but the attacks continued. So before the project ever began, before the dams were ever built, there were four strategic locations that the engineers decided this has to be where a beaver this big could hide.
Oh my God, is this like Godzilla but with a beaver?
Well, so they dynamite these areas. They go, they start going all up and down. They hit their target location.
Big Brown?
And they blow up these places, and Big Brown was never hurt, never attacked anyone again. So the dams went in, no problem. Now, within the last, I'll say 30 years, there have been sightings of a big beaver sunning itself by the coast. So a couple, about 100 miles to the coast from this inland water river valley, people have been saying they've been seeing a giant beaver sunning itself. Now, this is one of those stories where I'm like, this has got to be a bear. This has to be a bear. I don't know how you mistake a bear for a beaver, but
it's so much a hard time with this.
But
the whole thing, John. The whole thing.
I mean, to have gone to the extent that they blew up sections of the river to try and get this thing.
They blew up Big Brown.
They blew up Big Brown.
Not the beaver.
The beaver.
The beaver survived, guys. It's okay. It's sunning itself. It's sunning itself like all beavers should.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Like, I'm not totally up on the habits of beavers, so I'm not sure if they typically lay out in the sun, but that's where they say they see it.
You're so sweet, John. Don't ever change. I'm having a hard time with this. Big Brown, people.
But Big Brown was my number two. What's your number two, Box?
What's your number two? Oh my God, okay. Oh, I have trouble with that one. Okay. My number two is the Dog Man of Michigan.
Dog Man.
Dog Man. A lot of people like Dog Man. I don't know kind of why. I actually have a book that I've only half read. about Doc Man that my friend gave me that I should probably read at some point. But, and also, this is not the kids' musical about a crime-fighting half-man, half-dog. I found that out the hard way. Because there is a Dog Man musical. And I'm like, Dog Man musical? Oh, that's great. And it's different. So it's not the same Dog Man. So this is like kind of like the upper to mid lower peninsula. So this is actually pretty north of all the places that I've been talking. So there's a lot of, it was really hard to research this one because there's a lot of like weird contradictions or just weirdness in general. So this is the best that I have for now. So, and again, I apologize for misuse of words. So apparently in 1860, there were, and this is Native American Cheyenne or Cheyenne.
Cheyenne.
Okay, thank you. Dog soldiers that were hunted down by the U.S. And this is where they think maybe the legend came from, is because they hunted them all down except for one. They were actually human people, but they were called dog soldiers. But because of magics, he became half man and half dog. We don't know. So in 1887 is when we first get our big sighting in Wexford County between 2 and 10 lumberjacks. His stories change. They found, they saw a man or thing with like kind of a man's body in a dog head. And just, you know, stomping around. And some accounts said that the lumberjacks died. And some of them were like, no, they were fine. So I don't know what happened there. And then in 1937 or 1938, somebody in Paris, Michigan, had 5 wild dogs attack him, but one of them walked on 2 legs.
Really?
Yeah. In 1961, a watchman at a manufacturing plant took a photo of the possible dog man because it was like spooky and looked like a dog. I'm sorry guys, like I can't. Oh, I should probably. Okay, so he, most of the people say he was like 7 foot tall, with like black or gray fur. Some people say that he had a wolf face, and like I guess that's where I'm like, is it a werewolf?
Yeah.
Is it like a dog? Because people keep saying dog, so it's like, okay, is it a dog? So I get, but it has piercing blue eyes, which I found that kind of funny too. Like 7 foot tall, blue eyes.
Perfect.
Wow. Does he have a brother? So in this 1961, the watchman sees this creature, takes a photo, which looks kind of fake to me, but he claims it's super real. Then in 1987, this kind of like explodes and implodes in when the legend is played in Traverse City by DJ Steve Cook. And it's based on the legends from Native Americans and things like that. But he plays it on April Fool's. He plays it as an April Fool's joke. The song is not that great, but it did catch on to a lot of people. Like a lot of people were like starting to call in and were really excited about it because they were saying, oh, I've seen that too. And Steve Cook is like, I just made it up.
Right.
So he actually re-released it in 97 and 07. And I want you to kind of place that too. It was released in 87. He re-released in 97 and then also in 07.
And he caught people every time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in 1987, 3 campers in Sparta saw what looked like a man-dog, dog-man, man-bear-pig.
Man-bear-pig.
And they were like, they were driving, and they saw the Welcome to Sparta sign twice. So they think it was like a cryptid deja vu thing. I don't know. Yeah. So also, around that time, there was, well, not around that time, but later on, there was a film that was about the Dog Man. There was a thing called the Gable film, which has like an animal. It's supposed to be proof. It has like an animal lumbering around. It kind of looks like a bear to me. But anyway, there's like numerous accounts. And supposedly he comes in a 10-year cycle. So everything's starting, ending with 7. He kind of comes around.
So we just missed him.
We just missed him. But again, looking back at the accounts, it's like, well, yeah, the first one was in 1887. But then it says 1937, but in some counts it says 1938 was when Paris, the one in Paris, you know, so it's like 1961 was when the Watchmen saw it. So it kind of gets iffy.
Sure.
I don't know, because it seems like it's really beloved by a lot of people. I don't know why. Sorry. I don't, though. To me, it's like, okay, man, dog, man, you know. I don't put a lot of oomph into it, especially when it was like a DJ is like, well, I just kind of was kicking some stuff around and was like, that'd be funny as an April Fool's joke. So I think it gave people like something to be like, oh, something weird happened, or I saw a really big sure. animal or something. I just heard that song playing and it's probably what that is. So that's my take on that.
I I'll say the dog man kind of shows up in a lot of places, but I think in this particular case, the dog man has a lot more accountability with everything that happens in Michigan. Well, because there's a dog man of Oregon, but not a whole lot is said about him. It's like, oh, some people have seen this particular thing. It's like, that's it.
Oh. Cool.
Like that doesn't count. But there are more dates that kind of justify Dogman in Michigan. So
yeah, and he's like, as I mean, there's nothing that's like, oh, it's Dogman Day or any shit like that, but it does seem like there's a certain reverence to this creature.
Right.
I don't necessarily understand it, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's another thing of why I didn't include any Bigfoot sightings, because every state has Bigfoot sightings. I do, though, have a monster that's kind of like a Bigfoot, but it's not Bigfoot.
Right.
But yeah, so that's interesting that other states have dogmen.
Yeah, and I think
around.
I think every place has their Sasquatch. I think they have their dogmen. I mean, you can look at Bessie. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to have their sea monster type of deal.
Yeah.
So just what happens, I guess.
But not everybody's going to have their bandage man.
No.
That's all unique. Oregon.
That's all. That's and Big Brown.
All Oregon.
And Big Brown.
Shut up. I just got over that.
I don't think any other state would take credit for something like that the way Oregon did.
It's I
like,
don't think that should be mentioned in any books. That's a thing that you bury. Even if it is a real cryptid, that's a thing you bury. You don't want to be like, we have a giant beaver that we call Big Brown
with dynamite.
You don't want to be that state.
Well, so speaking of every state has its Sasquatch, my number one is Bat Squatch. Yes, Bat Squatch. Now, there are accounts of Bat Squatch everywhere from Mount St. Helens, which is actually in the state of Washington, to Mount Shasta, which is in the northern central portion of California. So most of his traveling region is in Oregon, so I felt it was appropriate. But Bat Squatch, I don't like pronouncing that name, is actually a fairly new cryptid. It was first sighted in 1980. So
it's really new.
It really is. And if you look this thing up, there's all sorts of variations about what it looks like. Everything from bat wings to bird wings, blue fur, purple skin, red eyes, whether the head looks like an ape or looks like a wolf. It's generally just considered a flying primate and has been sighted a couple times. Last most recently was cited in 2014 at a high school where students said that they saw a large creature of over 9 feet tall with a 20 to 30 foot wingspan fly past their classroom.
Did he come in and win the basketball game for them? Like Teen Wolf?
He probably could have at 9 feet tall. But, you know, it's and that's the most recent sighting, 2014. I mean, it's incredible. There's an account from 2011 where somebody says they literally watched this thing carry their dog off.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right. So it's where do these come from? It also has an intermingling of kind of the phenomena that surrounds the Mothman, where people who are in cars who see something flying, all of a sudden their car dies. This has a little bit of that too. So it's almost as if the Pacific Northwest took all of these attributes and characters and kind of made it into one thing between the Mothman and like and whatever variation of the Sasquatch you want to take.
Do you think they're friends?
Mothman and Sasquatch?
Batsquatch.
And Sasquatch? No, I think Sasquatch is jealous. I would be.
Yeah.
You can fly? That's not cool, dude. I can walk.
Well, they can, like, turn off cars and stuff.
I don't see how that power is relevant in any way, shape, or form, but it, you know, I mean.
On the forums, they're like, guess what I learned how to do?
Right, I could turn off cars.
Sasquatch is like, fuck you guys.
Meanwhile, Sasquatch is still just lumbering around in the forest.
Whatever, I got big fucking feet. Nobody's going to take plaster casts if you're dumb turning off cars.
That's right, yeah. No one's taking pictures of that.
Yeah.
So it's one of these things. I found it interesting because of how new it is. There's eyewitness accounts. You know, it's funny to me to think that what could possibly make a big enough blur that you think that you saw this. But I mean, the pictures are great. Like if you look up Batsquatch, the images people have come up with, like everything from a monkey with wings to a werewolf with wings. So,
so just look for an evil witch with green face paint.
Right.
And you'll find your answer.
That's it.
Yeah.
So what is...
I can't even imagine what, like you said, what kind of creature that would be to be like, and it had purple fur.
Right.
It's like,
I the thought process to getting to this point in 1980, it's like, okay, cool. All right. I guess we're just seeing things now. So you're number one. I want to hear about this one.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. I'll try not to disappoint. Okay, so we're going to talk about, you know, and the funny thing is, it's also like a Sasquatchy kind of thing. It's the Dewey Lake Monster, which is in the southwest portion of Michigan, and it's also called the Michigan Bigfoot and the Sister Lakes Sasquatch, which sounds really kind of campfire-y. And Michigan has Bigfoot sightings, but this one is a little bit different. And this one particularly happened in kind of a certain time. It was June 1964 that there were several reported sightings of this creature near Dewey Lake in Dowagiac. The creature was like rumored to dwell primarily along the swampland that extended just 15 miles. So that's not really that long. Supposedly it was like 9 feet tall, like 500 pounds, like black furry hair all around it. And overnight it was a sensation. There was like, you know, Dewey Lake Monster, you know, burgers and flamethrowers and whatnot. But just as much as there were people that were like coming out to try to get a look at it, there were 3,000 strangers coming out at night with guns trying to shoot it. So the cops had a lot of troubles on their hands. For one, trying to figure out what this thing was, and for two, trying to stop people from acting like crazy people.
Yeah.
The best headline that I did see from this time was Monster is huge, hairy, also bashful. Anyway, he's outnumbered.
Bashful.
That was a headline, and I loved it, every second of it. Basically, the frenzy eventually did die down, but people are still seeing the Dewey Lake Monster, and there's actually a Facebook page for people with their sightings. The creature seems to be somewhat aquatic in nature, so it's basically like water Bigfoot, waterfoot. And it swims under the surface, and some people say it's scaly, claws kind of like a bear, but some people say it's not. Some people's, you know, pictures show it kind of with like a cone kind of shaped head.
Okay.
But anyway, he's not so bashful anymore. There are some reports that like he smashes cars and turns over cars, so he's kind of become an angry mofo lately. Like I said, there are still people that are having sightings to this day of him to warrant a Facebook page for it, but he just kind of keeps to himself for the most part when he's not hulking out. So he doesn't have a song about him though.
No,
he's not as interesting as Bat's Watch, I guess. He's like part water person, part Bigfoot. He's not.
But you know what he but what he does well, because no one's they haven't caught him yet.
Yeah, right. And again, 1964, if he's still being seen, you know, he's doing good for his time, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
that's it. And I think that's the takeaway from this, is that if these things exist, they're the hide and seek champions of the world.
Yeah.
Because we can't catch him, we can't find him,
not a trace,
not nothing. Nothing.
Not the scat of Big Brown, the beaver, sunbathing. Oregon, I will never probably see you now. I'm too afraid.
Oh.
Too afraid of that big beaver.
Go over there.
No,
it's fine.
I might. to look for the big beaver.
Hunt him down.
I just like burst into every like hunting store and be like, where's a gun that can bag me the Big Brown? I'm sure I will make tons of friends.
I think you will.
Oregon friends.
Just remember, everyone's a crabber.
Do you have anything to plug?
I don't, but I had a great time doing this list. And while it might not be the next list episode, in the future, we will definitely revisit other states.
Yes.
If you are out there and you really want your state represented, go ahead
and fight for it.
Fight for it. Write us. Let us know that on the next episode, you want research done on, I don't know, does Rhode Island have 5 cryptids? I'd be happy to find out. Let me know.
I don't know. My heart is going towards Missouri and that beautiful Momo creature. Those lovely peanut butter sandwich stealing waves.
Well, that'll be for next time.
I'm going to also once again plug our new bright and shiny icons that were made by Watchful Eye Art on Twitter. And also, I would like to plug our brand new, beautiful, shiny art that we have for the podcast for our box combo, which was done by Marta. And she is at SUZUIA. And that, again, is at SUZUIA. And her comms are open right now, too. So I would definitely go check her out. She's actually going to be doing a piece for High Art Camp for us. So be sure to check that out as well. Go to Haunted MTL. We are writers, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've written anything, but it sounds like you're going to be in the works for writing something animated.
The upcoming episode, or the first episode of Satania, I believe it's pronounced.
Sweet.
I'll get more.
It looks kind of like a vibe of Has-Been.
It does. Like, the animation is kind of giving me a throwback to like Doug on Nickelodeon.
Oh my gosh.
I'm let me just say that, like, I am slowly becoming the cartoon horror guy, which I'm completely okay with.
Good.
So make sure you check back for that review.
Yep, it's going to be good. His husband was really good, so you should check that one out too. Anything else?
Nope. Have a great week.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll see you next week.
Bye.